Konnichiwa, this is Ryu Vocal.
Shalom, this is Matt Cohen.
Welcome to Big Lens Fast Shutter, where we demystify the world of sports photography. And we have a bit of a pre-news, because we've already recorded news maybe a week ago with Matt Cohen. And Sid has decided to basically take a temporary leave from BLFS, just for, you know, various life type of reasons. And Matt has been very generous in joining us. I just want to give this platform to Matt for a moment and tell us a bit more about you that other people, including your parents, might not know. Go ahead.
Well, it's great to be here. Sorry that Sid can't be here with us, but I'm very honored to join you. Again, my name is Matt Cohen. I'm a sports photographer in Oakland, California. My parents don't know that I'm not really Jewish.
Great. It's going to be Matt and me for I guess, a bit longer. And now we resume our regularly scheduled programming.
Here at News, both Ryu and I will tell you our best and worst shoot of the previous month, and we talk about ourselves, because we like to.
Matt, what was your worst and the best shoot for the month of August?
Well, the worst shoot, hands down, I took an assignment to shoot a big music festival in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. I used to like shooting concerts a lot, but it's gotten more restrictive and there's restrictions on how long you can shoot and what bands you can shoot. And
how long you can shoot?
In general, if you're really lucky, you get to shoot the first three songs and then you get kicked out of the pit. Some publicist came up with it because somebody's makeup was running or something like that. And it's kind of spread all across, you know, basically every band will have some kind of length restriction. And then some of them you have to sign waivers saying that you give your rights away to the band. So I didn't shoot those bands. And editor saying, well, why didn't you shoot this band? Well, you know, that's why. So, and it was in a park and it was, you know, really nice weather, but it was just packed and getting from end to end was really carrying a whole bunch of gear was not the most fun. I ended up with some really good pictures that I was really happy with, but it just didn't quite seem like it was worth the effort that had to go into it and all the frustrations that had to go into it. You know, I do one of those shoots every once in a while to remind me how much I like shooting sports. So that was the only, you know, really non-sport shoot that I did. So, and then my best shoot was I shot two baseball games. My hometown, Pittsburgh Pirates, where I'm originally from, were in town to play the Giants, and I got to shoot two out of those three games, and the Pirates won both of those games, so I was kind of happy about that.
But didn't you say in our interview last month that you are not too keen on shooting baseball?
That's why it's kind of funny that those are my two favorite shoots, but they were good games, and it's a team that I grew up with, and they won both games, so that was fun.
Oh, good, good, good. And for those who might have actually forgotten who Matt is, he was on our podcast as an interviewee, really, last one, right? The sixth episode.
Sixth episode, yeah.
Yeah, and he lives in California, and he shoots animals. Wild animals every day. So, oh yeah, and me. The best shoot was, it's a very good question. I don't even know what my best shoot was. Oh yeah, sorry, the Homeless World Cup. That was my best shoot by far. I had a really, really good time. I started from Thursday, and I did Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was 4 days. And it's something that Sid did, well, he kind of started out shooting sports when the Homeless World Cup was in Australia.
I remember a couple of the Aussie photographers talking about that, like it was a great event to shoot. Mm. That was a few years ago, at least.
And it really, really was. It's just fantastic, fantastic event. 64 countries, less than 20 for the women's, but like a lot of for the men's. I didn't really actually know anything about it before I went there, and I found out, for instance, that you can only play once in a lifetime. So if you play in this tournament, you can't play for the next one. I mean, that's it. And you can't really be homeless at the time you're going to be playing at the tournament. So you have to get out of homelessness. If you're a drug addict, you have to get out of the whole drug thing, alcohol, whatever. You have to kind of get yourself down straight before you can participate. But just the atmosphere of these players playing, I guess you can't really see that in a professional game, because in professional they're doing this as entertainment for us and for money and everything else, but for these people it is guess in a really cheesy way, it's a ticket out to a better life. It was just great. I had a really, really good time. I'd like to do it again next year in Mexico, but it's a bit far, so I don't really know. The worst is that I was supposed to shoot an international friendly at a certain city for a certain client, but what happened was that 15 minutes into my travel, so I got on a moving vehicle of sorts, it went, and 15 minutes later I got a call from my client, said, oh, it's canceled. And I said, what? Canceled. So you have to come back now. So I had to like wait another 2 hours and 15 minutes for the thing to actually arrive at the other place. From there, I had to then come back immediately. I mean, they paid for it and everything as well.
Sure.
Know? I have to sign an NDA, so I can't really say anything about these things. And yeah, that was it for me.
Yeah, hoping for a better September. It's football season over here, American football. So
yes, it's coming, the regular season. So it should be fun, huh, for you.
Yeah, can't wait.
San Diego, San Francisco, Oakland.
Yeah, I don't do San Diego. That's about a 7-hour drive, 2-hour flight from here. So I just do Oakland and San Francisco.
I always gonna forget like how big America is when people say like, "Oh, San Francisco and LA is like really, really close." I really thought it was really close, you know, and it's not really close at all.
Yeah, I go down to LA a good bit, but San Diego is another couple hours past that in pretty bad traffic, so I don't really go down there.
Well, then let's hope we'll hear more about Matt's American football adventure, hopefully in the next podcast.
Definitely.
We Introduce is a section where we present a sports photographer or a person related to the sports photography business. And this month, we have Tim McKenna from French Polynesia. Is that exactly where it is? Are you actually from there or are you just going to live there right now?
I live in Tahiti, which is an island, part of the French Polynesia group of islands. And I'm actually originally from Australia.
But you kind of have like a bit of a French accent.
Honestly, I don't know what accents I have anymore. I've traveled so much, and but I spent a lot of time in France, so I speak French pretty good, and born in Australia, and then moved to France for a long time, and been in Tahiti now for 10 years.
That's why, because I live in France at the moment, so I'm probably actually just hearing that bit of that French side of yours. How did you start out as a professional sports photographer?
First, I worked as an assistant, mostly on commercial and fashion jobs in Los Angeles with my uncle, and I managed to buy myself my first equipment. And while I was studying in Australia, I started to take photos of surfing, and I started to submit to magazines, and the magazines started to publish my photos, and that's how I kind of got started.
I was just looking at some of your shots, and correct me if I'm wrong, but some of the shots that you've actually taken, you look like you're right next to the surfer. How did you actually take those shots?
Well, there's two types of shots. Either you shoot from a boat in the channel with the telephoto lens. You can get really close to the action, especially here in Tahiti where, you know, we have good channels and perfect reef breaks and the boats can get really close, or with a boat or jet ski. Or if I want to get even closer, I'll put my cameras in special water housings, and then you can actually swim into the waves, into the tube with the surfer underneath the waves, and you can really get super close.
Seems like there are so many ways that you are shooting these. What kind of equipment do you usually use? Do you use quite a lot of more wide angle stuff more, or more telephoto, or how do you actually go about doing them?
That's what I like about surf photography is that you can really use you can have various angles, you know, obviously shoot from above, from below, it's one of the only sports where you can really turn around the subject and shoot in a lot of angles. And I just have the regular professional photographer gear and lenses, and I can use anything from a 16 fisheye lens to a 500 f4 telephoto lens. It really depends on the type of waves, the size of the waves, and the condition. You know, when you have kind of medium, small, pristine conditions and there's no current, you can go for a swim with a water housing. If the waves a little bigger, that's when you might want a helicopter so you can get, you know, close to the action but from above. Some places you can only shoot from land, a big telephoto lens. It really depends on the wave and conditions.
So that really is the whole condition that affects a lot more than anything else in surf photography.
Definitely. It's the ocean that dictates how you're going to shoot, pretty much.
And what's the most difficult thing, I guess, besides the condition when shooting surf photography?
When you're shooting in the water, obviously, it's physically difficult. You actually have to, you know, swim and position yourself. You need quite a bit of experience in waves so you don't get hurt. Then when you're shooting from the beach or from a boat, it's more kind of have to be patient, and you got to be able to anticipate, because often there's one wave that comes in during the day that's much better than the others, or a surfer will do an incredible move. You really got to wait and be able to anticipate those little perfect moments where either the ocean is going to throw you a big perfect wave or the surfer is going to do an incredible move.
So have you ever gotten in a way of a surfer while sea surfing? Well, maybe for a competition, and you kind of were in a place that you're not really supposed to?
Not really, because in competition, they don't allow water photographers to use fisheye lenses. Like when there's an event, the minimum focal length would be 135 millimeters. You're shooting the surfers in the water, but they're kind of far away and you never get in their way. Now, when we shoot outside of a competition, because most surfing photos are actually done, you know, just as we call free surfs, is when the surfers are training, just having fun in the waves. And so most of the photography you see are done during those sessions. And then with experience, you just know that if you're on the line the surfer is taking on the wave, you just try and dive under the wave before he comes so you don't get it in his way. Sometimes, you know, maybe if a surfer does an aerial, tries and boosts an aerial in front of me and he can't exactly control where he's going to land, sometimes you have a few close calls, but we try to avoid that. And usually professional surfers are so good that they never bump into you, you know, but they can pretty much control and do everything they want with their board.
But how do you actually make money as a surf photographer?
To be honest, there's not that much money
okay.
in surf photography. I do other commercial work, fashion photography, I mean, stock photography. Surf photography is more a passion. Obviously, I do make a lot of sales with the magazines and advertisings. It really depends. If you have a great session with, you know, famous surfers and good waves, then you have potential to sell your shots better than, obviously, if it's a contest and there's a lot of photographers there and your photos aren't in demand that much. That's why I like to do what we call surf trips to different islands here in French Polynesia or overseas, you know, in Indonesia or other locations around the world. You kind of put together a crew of a few surfers with a cameraman and a photographer, and you go off and you try and do a travel story for the magazines, and you try and produce images for the brands, for the sponsors of the surfers. You can sell photos editorially to all the magazines and websites, and also to the brands that need photos, content for their advertising campaigns.
If you had a choice between hanging out at the beach, shooting surfing, or going off to the mountains and shooting snowboards and, you know, winter stuff, which one would you rather do? Because I think I know what your answer is.
You know, what I really like is to change, to not do the same thing all the time. So, I mean, surf photography is my passion. I mean, surf is my passion, really, you know, and I live in a hot place. When I'm working, I actually prefer to be a snowboard photographer, because when you go on snowboard trips, you actually can snowboard and, you know, ride down the mountain before the snowboarder, so you can find the angles and stuff. So you actually... I do more sports. I have more fun, you know, on a snowboard trip than on a surf trip, where you'll be, most of the time, you'll be taking pictures. And when you're swimming in the waters, you're not surfing, you're taking pictures.
So in most cases, does that mean that most of the shots you actually do for the surf photography thing, is it usually set up rather than, like you said, the free surf, rather than actually doing it in the spirit of competition?
Basically, when I started for 10 years, I would cover the best events of the ASP Surf Tour, which is the, you know, the competitions. But for the last 10 years, they've changed the system. And they have their own photographers that shoot every event, and they give the images free of rights to the magazines. that kind of killed the surf photographers that were following just the ASB competitions. But it's no problem because the competitions are often not that interesting, a bit boring, and sometimes at not great locations. So it's often better to go to a remote location and try and produce some images that nobody has seen before, or instead of a competition. Now competitions are live on the webcast. People have already seen it on the internet, so you're not going to show them photos a month later in a magazine of the same competition they already saw. The interest has just shifted more on free surfing, and there's plenty of free surfing and going around every day in the world.
Do you have any advice on sports photographers who want to get into surf photography?
First, they got to try and get in the water as much as possible and try and learn surfing and try and swim in the waves so they can try and understand and be safe and try and take pictures in the water. They got to be patient. As I said, it's not an industry that pays a lot of money, so it's not something you would do to make a lot of money. It's more something you do out of passion, and if you're good at it, you might be able to make a bit of money. It's very competitive. I mean, there's obviously 10, 20 guys that make a good living, but there's a lot of photographers that do it kind of as part-time or work in other fields also.
If your equipment breaks, how do you get them repaired?
That is probably my number one problem and number one nightmare, because I have to FedEx it to Los Angeles. Icon might take a couple of weeks to repair it, and then they have to FedEx it back, and then I get taxed on the price of the FedEx and the price of the repair.
No. Probably so, costs like four times or five times the amount of usual repairs on land.
Exactly. I get sprayed, salt water. Basically, every year or every 8 months, I need to have my body sent to Nikon to be cleaned and repaired, because I'm always, underneath the rain or in the surf, in the spray. But find solutions. I have a lot of airline attendants that take up my equipment, drop it at Nikon and bring it back. Or often I go to Los Angeles just to repair my equipment and to do a bit of shopping. It actually costs me less to buy a ticket, buy a few things and bring them back than to FedEx and come back.
Yeah, wow, that's that is crazy. I go down the street, because Nikon, where I live, is really, really close. I can really just walk 20 minutes and it's there. And just the thought of actually FedExing everything.
It cost me a fortune. I really, sometimes it's a big burden. I probably have four or five bodies, because with the amount of images I produce, if one body goes down, I'm okay. But if two go down, then I've got a problem. So I kind of have to have always probably three, four bodies, and there's always one being repaired, and I kind of juggle like that.
So you should actually ask MPS to put up a little office on Tahiti, then it'll be fine.
That would be great.
Lastly, if I cannot incorporate words such as dude, tubular, radical, gnarly, and stoked in one sentence, would I not be accepted by the likes of, what, Sito Rats, Wolfpack, or Bra Boys?
Yeah, you don't have to have the lingo, really. You just have to love the ocean, and you'll be accepted everywhere.
I think I should have to start learning to surf before I can actually do all the lingo stuff. But thank you, Tim. That's fantastic.
In Masterclass, we pick a topic in sports photography and discuss it front to back. This month, I decided that I wanted to look into shooting wide angle for sports. I think that the rule is, in general, is to shoot really tight and crop really tight. And if you follow that, you end up with a bunch of pictures that look exactly the same. And one way to get around that is to shoot with wide angles and try to get some different angles.
Can I be really, really dumb about this?
Sure.
What is wide angle? From what millimeter does wide angle, in your mind, start out?
Well, I think that depends on how far away whatever it is you're shooting is from you. I think traditionally a wide angle would be anything under, say 28 millimeters. But if you're shooting, say, an American football game and you're shooting it from 40 yards away and you're shooting at 70 millimeters, it's going to look pretty wide angle, because you're going to get a lot of the stadium and the crowd in the background. And even though people wouldn't think that 70 is wide angle, the end product of that picture is going to be pretty wide.
You're speaking wide angle in a quite general sense, depending on the situation, kind of wide angle. Not traditionally, yeah. If I'm shooting 28 millimeters or less, that's wide angle. You're not saying that. It just kind of depends on what the situation is and what you're shooting.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm always looking for a different looking picture. I don't want all my pictures to look the same as all my other pictures, and I don't want my pictures to look the same as other photographers' pictures. And if you're standing on the sideline of a football game or sitting at the end line of a soccer game, shooting with a 300 or 400 millimeter lens, just trying to get the action, your pictures are going to look the same as the guy sitting next to you and the guy sitting next to him. You need to get those pictures if you're working. You want to get those pictures if you're trying to get better because they're important, but it's not the whole game. And if you come back with 300 pictures of two guys fighting over a ball with no background and no other context in it, you're not really telling the story of the game, of the event, of sports in general. And the way I like to tell that story is shooting wider and getting the action, but also getting the scene. Like, is it an old gym? Is it a new football stadium? Is it a college that's playing in a historic kind of stadium? Is there crazy fans in the background? Is the sky a crazy color of red because it's a sunset? So these are all things that if you're shooting very tight with a long lens, you're just not going to get at all.
So you're saying it's non-action shots in sports photography that you like to capture with a wide-angle lens. Is that kind of how it is?
I think that there's two ways to look at it. You can shoot scene setting shots with wide angle lenses, but then there's also opportunities where you can get close enough. There's some sports that I shoot because I can get that close and then shoot the action with the wide angle lens. A good example of that is snowboarding. If you're sitting right next to a super pipe, those guys are going to come out of the pipe and you can be 3 or 4 feet away from them, shooting them with a 24 millimeter lens. You're getting the action of them coming out of the pipe, but you're also getting the mountain behind them and the trees and other people who are sitting on the pipe watching. And that's a picture that you can't shoot American football with a 14 millimeter lens or a 24 millimeter lens. You know, you can shoot a scene setting shot, but you're not going to get the action.
Just in general, like, how would you use a wide angle lens? Because most people are, if they kind of started out with the whole sports photography thing, they're really into getting a tight action shot of, you know, someone fighting against someone else or kicking a ball or swinging a racket or whatever. So what should a novice person be looking into when using a wide angle lens to shoot sports photography?
Right. Well, I think that if you want to get any kind of action, you need to choose a sport to shoot where you're really close. And again, it's not going to be baseball. It's not going to be football. You can do that. You can go up into the top sections and shoot down and get some really interesting overall overhead kind of shots. But if you want to get action, you need to figure out some way to get closer to it. And those kind of sports are going to be snowboarding, skateboarding, cycling, things like that, where the photographers are able to get really close to the action. So when I cover those kind of sports, I'm looking for an opportunity to shoot wide and to take advantage of how close you can get to that action.
And I think it's a very underappreciated or maybe undercovered thing. Undercovered, and I mean, like, there's not that much attention going into how one uses a wide angle lens in sports photography, because I think what people think first when they think of sports photography is big lenses. Well, I mean, the title of this podcast is Big Lens Fast Shutter, and that's how what it is in a nutshell. But like Matt said, you can deviate from that and shoot something different by using wide angle lens. When I actually shoot football, well, you know, soccer, I do have to get very, very close to make something out of it. And in most cases these days, depending on where you shoot and who you're shooting, the security will come and say, oh, you can't get that close, or oh, you can't actually shoot there. So one thing you really have to be aware is that you kind of have to test how close you can actually get to the action. And if they say no, don't go back there again. Like, that's the line. You can actually get as close as you think you can. And then the security will determine, depending on who the person is, depending on what kind of game it is, depending on a lot of different factors, will decide, okay, you're okay to actually come this close, but beyond that, you can't, because A, I've been told by my boss not to have people this close, or B, just in general, that he doesn't really want you there because he's had a bad day. So, but once they tell you to do that, you really should not test him again. Because the other thing that could possibly happen is they will throw you out. That you don't really want that to happen, because then you can't shoot the rest of the game.
Yeah, well, not just thrown out of the game. If it's high profile enough, if it gets back to somebody's boss or whatever, they'll just pull your credential forever.
And that would really, really suck.
Yeah?
Yeah, I had a very close encounter with the whole thing, but that's probably a story for another time. I like to shoot, for instance, wide angle from a very, very low angle. Wide angle from a very low angle, because it kind of gives you grand feeling of the entire stadium, and it puts you kind of into the picture, which is not possible with a long lens. And one of my main the inspiration for using like wide angle very, very low to the ground was that I was watching NFL films back in the day when I was living in America, and they still do this, by the way. NFL films is still being done every single game, apparently. They have a film crew that uses film.
Yep.
They really go very, very low. And I think that's one of the first media, but let it be photography or let it be video, that kind of like use the low angle to make it look more exciting. It really does help a lot. If you have never actually done that, get down low on the ground with your stomach down on the ground. Or you can just put your camera, put it on the ground and angle it and blindly do the focusing thing. If you have one of those LCDs that kind of pop out, so you can actually see what you're shooting, you should actually try that as well. But trust me, it will make a world of difference. You'll see a lot of different things you've never actually even anticipated before, just because you're shooting wide and just because you're shooting low.
NFL films, they are at every game and they do shoot film. And the guys who shoot here will actually put the camera on the ground and flip up their viewfinder to be a right angle. And they'll just lean down and look through it. And the camera literally will be on the ground. You can't get any lower than that. And it also, you know, just to build on what you were saying, it gives you a dramatic kind of view. It makes the players look bigger. And if you're shooting youth sports, puts you into the world of these kids who are close to the ground, rather than shooting them from your eye level, shooting down on them, you're actually putting the people who are looking at your pictures right into that game.
And do you have any specific tips and techniques that person who wants to try this whole wide angle lens thing in sports photography?
Yeah, absolutely. Getting back to the difference between shooting with a long lens and shooting with a wide lens, if you're shooting wide and you're getting close to what you're doing, say you're sitting on the end line at a basketball game, or you're at the side of the bowl at a skate park or something like that, the wider angle gives you creative control to make the picture exactly like you want. If you're shooting action that's happening 30 or 40 yards away with a 300 or 400 millimeter lens, there's not a whole lot of creative composition that you can do. Like, yes, you can move them around in the frame a little bit. You can drag the shutter to give some motion or something like that. But in general, it's going to be two guys fighting over a ball and with not very much depth of field, and those pictures are going to look the same. Contrast that to shooting with a wide angle lens very close to what you're shooting, and any movement in the camera, whether it's side to side or up and down, you have quite a bit more control over what that picture is going to end up looking like. And the difference between if you're shooting with Nikon's widest lens, a 14 to 24, there's a huge difference between that. I think Canon is a 16 to 35. Again, there's a pretty big difference there. So you're zooming in and out, you're moving up and down. Any small change in how high, if you're holding the camera on the ground or if you're holding it on your knees or something like that, these are all going to give you a lot of control over what that picture is going to look like. If there's something in the background that you want in it, you can put it in. If there's not, you can rotate your hands, you know, 15 or 20 degrees, and all of a sudden, whatever's in the background isn't going to be there anymore. And that's the difference between shooting wide and shooting long, is that if you're shooting long and that action's happening, you're not moving anywhere. You're in one position. That action's happening in one position. Whatever's in the background is in the background, and you're just going to have to get it in the picture. Getting the different look is a lot easier with a wide angle lens, just because any small movements in your camera, in your position, anything like that is going to give you a drastically different look in the picture at the end of the day.
Any things that people kind of should be going to kind of watch out for when they're shooting wide angle?
One of the key things is that when you're shooting wide and you're trying to get really close to the action, which you should if you're trying to get action pictures with wide angle lenses, you should be getting as close as you can. That action is going to look further away than it really is. So you need to be very careful that you're not getting too close. You're not going to get ball to the front of the lens or a player diving on you. I'm going to put up an example picture of that that's going to go up with a blog post for this. And it's a player saving a basketball from going out of bounds. And he is less than 2 feet away from me when the picture's taken. And a split second after the picture was taken, he was in my lap. And he's a big guy, 7 feet tall. So you need to be very careful that you're giving yourself enough room so that you're not going to hurt the player or hurt your gear or yourself.
Isn't it kind of like when you have those warnings on the mirror, right, on your car?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Objects closer than they appear.
Yeah, that is very, very true. In terms of kit lenses and things like that, they don't usually go that wide. I mean, it'll be maybe around like 28, 35 millimeter will be the widest.
Yep.
For some reason, kit lenses as well as compact cameras, they emphasize the length and not the width. Nothing we can really do about it. It's you just kind of, if you want to go really, really wide, you really have to go and buy an extra lens just to shoot wide. But once you do go wide, very much of a sucker for shooting wide in all my sports, and I want to get to the action as close as possible. And once you do, it will just open up a lot of different angles that you've never thought you could shoot from.
The way I look at it is that it's low percentage. If you just sit in one place with a telephoto and shoot the action, you're going to get a lot of keepers. And, you know, like I said, they're going to look very similar. It's riskier to shoot wide and to get close and things like that because you'll miss or you'll get something in the background that you can't do anything with. But that's part of growing as a photographer, is taking these kind of risks and seeing what works and developing your own style. You have more latitude to develop your own style when you're shooting wide because you have all these choices that you can make, exactly how wide, exactly how close, the different framing, the different focus points that you don't have when you're shooting with a telephoto, because at that point in time, they're far enough away that even a small move in the camera or even taking a step side to side or whatever is not going to help you really all that much. And when you're up close with a wide angle lens, any choice that you make is going to show up in the picture. And it's a good way to learn, get better at what you're doing, refine your technique and your eye.
Especially if you're shooting amateur sports, it's a good way to take a very dramatic shot compared to a long lens, because you tend to be able to get a lot closer than a professional game match.
And again, we were talking last time about shooting high school sports. This doesn't even have to be high school. It can be little kids. It can be little league. It doesn't even have to be an organized sport. You can go down to the local skate park and sit on the lip of the bowl and, you know, shoot the guys flying around there. Again, pro sports are not the be-all, end-all. It's not where all good photography happens. And if you kind of open up the set of things that you're willing to shoot, you'll find opportunities to use wide-angle lenses more in those kind of things than you would in pro sports.
Yeah, just because you can get closer to the action compared to the pros. So that really is just a really, 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 really big advantage if you want to shoot something quite different and quite dramatic. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think we got it.
Okay. Well, that is the Matt's first masterclass. And if you're nice, you should put nice words and encouragement on the show notes so that Matt can actually come back and help us again with the next masterclass. That's it.
Yeah, I'll be back.
You Win is a part of the show where you, the listeners, participate in a monthly theme competition. The top three photos will be presented on our site, and the grand champion will be interviewed on our show. And this month, the winner of the Airborne competition is Miguel Chincario from Brazil, who I have actually emailed, and he, you know, got back to me. And I sent him an email again, and he never got back to me after that. So we're not going to have an interview with him, but we should really talk about it because it's really a beautiful, beautiful photograph. And yeah, so Matt, what do you think about this photo? I mean, you can probably see it on our website. So if you're listening to this and you don't know what the hell we're talking about, go to the website and you'll be able to see it.
The more I look at this picture, the more I like it. The composition is, it looks like it's, he did a really good job of getting the pit exactly at the bottom, but not flush with the bottom, which makes it a little bit more interesting. I like how the runner in the top left corner is just inside the frame up there. And then the guys with their in the various states of being airborne, and then the splash, it almost looks like a composite of several pictures. And I really, you know, just because of the trajectory that they're taking, that's great. And then he got really lucky with the light at that time of day. Usually you don't really see light coming in from the side like that during sports competitions, but all of those things really combined very well. So it's a great picture.
And it really, really is. I guess like I was just kind of looking at it again while I'm looking at it right now. And the only beef, if it was going to be like this moment, was like, oh my goodness, like that's a crazy, crazy great photo, is that I wish there were a bit more reflection, you know what I mean, at the top. But as in sports, it's rarely ever perfect because you can't really redo any of these scenes again. Hats off really to Miguel for this fantastic, fantastic photo. I wish I could actually say like, oh, and then you win something, but no, you don't. Your picture's going to be up on the website and everybody hopefully will have a chance to see it.
I think I would add you should make it a point to go see this picture because it's a common view, you know, shooting the steeplechase from low and on the side, but he did something with the timing of it and he waited until the exact moment that there was the most things going on in the picture, and that's not common. If you're listening to this, you should make it a point to go to biglensfastshotter.com and check it out.
If Matt says that, then you have to go and see it, all right? So go and see it, please. And our next month competition is dirt. So anything dirt, dirty, dirt everywhere, just dirt. With photo, please. Not like, you know, dirt. Just don't take pictures of earth and give it to us. And you can already go, and it's the competition should be underway. To participate, go to our Flickr group, Big Lens Fast Shutter, and post your picture on the September-themed competition topic. Thank you very much.
You asked for it, you get it. Ryu and I will rip your photos into smithereens. Hold on to your headphones. Here comes the pain! Here on Training Ground, we're going to take a look at some of the pictures that users have submitted. They have, keep in mind that they have asked for the criticism, and we're going to give it to them.
Exactly. And Matt is going to go with his first, and which one have you chosen?
I've chosen one from Ken Reeb Jr.
Okay.
And it's PVGP 2011-10, and it's a picture of two cars entering a turn from experience. I know that this picture was taken in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I've been on this course. I've ridden my bike on this course. Ken offered this up for...
If you're actually sitting in front of a computer, you can go to our website, and we'll actually have these photos up so you can see what we're going to criticize, because I think if you just listen to what we're saying, it might not make that much of a sense. Well, it might, but it might be a better experience if you kind of, you know, listen to us rip people apart with the picture in front of you than without it. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, so the two cars going through the turn on a road course. This is the Vintage Grand Prix in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I see what he was trying to do here, but the cars are going to be going at different speeds at different points in the turn, and so you're not going to ever really be able to get them, if they're that far apart, in focus and both frozen in the action. But beyond that, he wants to think a little bit more about the composition on this one. The stairwell that's running through the upper left is not helping. On a race course like this, you have a lot of different options of where you want to be, and you want to choose one that's going to have a background that either is nothing at all or that adds to the picture. And this one with the stairwell in the upper left and the bit of the curb that looks like it's in the bottom left, it's just not adding to the picture at all. In fact, it's taking away from the cars because the focus of your eyes is going to be drawn away from the cars. And then one more thing I would say about this is that you want to also pick a spot where you can do something with the light. And when you're going to have part of it be in the sun and part of it be in a deep shadow from the trees like that, it's going to be difficult. Whereas if he would have set up a little bit further down the track, he would have been able to get both of the cars in the shadows. Or if he set up further up the track, he would have been able to get both the cars in the sun. And that would have helped out with the exposure and the overall tone of the picture.
But you're being awfully nice about it, though. I'm very surprised because I thought you could actually do it. Ken, I don't know you very well, but and you write on our websites quite a lot, and I really appreciate it. But I think this is a really bad picture. Just in general, you kind of have to really ask yourself whether or not you think this is a good picture or not. And this has been cropped. You think this has been cropped?
Yeah, well, it looks like it's 8:10 aspect ratio, so I'm guessing it has been cropped, yeah.
I try to ask myself every single time I take a picture whether or not there's something interesting going on. And there's nothing interesting going on in this picture. There's just two cars and that's it. And you have to set the bar in you a bit higher than this if you want to become a better photographer. Doesn't really matter what kind of equipment you have, experience, whatnot. You have to really, really, really kind of dig in deep and look at the picture and say, is this interesting? Would any other people find it interesting? And it's the most difficult thing to do with your own photos because you've got, it's like you're a little baby and you want to actually like say, oh, it's great, I did it, then way, and it's all good. That shouldn't be the case because at the end of the day, if you want to show it to other people hopefully will find it as interesting as you think it is. And looking at this picture, I'm betting there were probably other shots that were interesting, or there weren't. And you shouldn't be downloaded because you're not going to get great pictures every single time you go and shoot. So this one, I would, put in a bin and forget about it.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing. Reading the description that he wrote on here, he's talking about how he chose this corner because the wheel comes up on the cars, because of the angle of the turn. That's something that you want to not get fixated on. Like getting that little detail is not going to automatically make it a good picture or a bad picture. If you're looking to get something like that, make sure the rest of the picture is really interesting. And then that will be a nice detail in that picture. But just a tire coming up off the ground or sparks flying off of the back of a motorcycle or something like that is not itself going to make a good picture. So don't get fixated on it.
Yeah, don't do that. We've moved on to Eli Radin because he asked for it, really. And then he submitted us three photos. Can you see it, Matt?
Yep.
At the very top, the orange football player. The good thing is that you've got head to toe of the player and the guy is dribbling the ball or, attacking the ball, however you want to actually call it. In most cases, you're sitting quite low to the ground and you've got enough separation, I think, with the background. But I think it might have actually been shot a bit higher f-stop, so it's not really, really blurry in the background. But that also kind of depends what kind of equipment you have. If you got f2.8, I think the background would be a lot blurrier than what he's got over here. Mid-action, everything's great, and that's about the only positive thing I can probably say about these photos, but I'll leave the rest of the bad stuff to Matt.
Yeah, I would just say that, he got the action and he froze it and everything is in there, but the pictures themselves are pretty boring and they're not going to be really useful, if he's looking to get these published or if he's looking to get better. I call these kind of pictures target practice because you've got it, you got the picture, but basically what you're left with is a hole in the target. Like you didn't do anything spectacular, you didn't do anything creative. It's just...
I've got other names for these pictures, but I won't even say them, but keep them going.
Obviously, these are just a few shots from the game, but if you didn't, Eli, if you didn't get other pictures that show people baring their teeth because they're trying to get to a ball or elbowing somebody else out of the way or jumping or diving or something like that, like these are sports action pictures. And what you have now are like these pictures, you could have gotten them on the training ground. You could have gotten them. These guys were just joking around in the parking lot. Like there's no intensity. There's no emotion. There's no conflict. There's nothing except a guy and a ball. It could be worse, they could be out of focus, or they could be horribly exposed or something like that. But in general, you want to try and get peak action moment, or at least something where, somebody is sweating or yelling at somebody else, or just put something else in the picture to make that picture, other than just having a guy in a ball.
I'll throw these away as well. Not really even worth it to show it to your friends, because I know you can do better than this. Just got to do a bit better than what you've actually got over here. And next, which one should we do? The Frito? That's not that bad, though, all these photos. Have you seen them? The hockey ones?
The hockey ones. Yeah.
They're fine. I don't see anything really wrong with them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he has a tough background to work with those advertising boards, but, you know, it looks like he did about as well as he could, you know, maybe just setting up in a different spot.
If Eli is listening to this, that it might actually be a bit of an example, like what is an interesting photo, because there's something going on in all three photos that Frito has submitted. People kind of battling for the ball, and there's action, and there's, you know, a bit of emotion.
They're not standing up perfectly straight. They're not waiting for something to happen. Like all of the six, seven guys that are in this picture are actually doing something. They're exerting themselves. They're in a position other than straight up standing up. And in all of them, there's a conflict between the two players. Like, I have the ball and I don't want you to have the ball. And you need to be able to say something that, look at these pictures and figure out what's being said by these pictures. And then look at Eli's pictures and figure out what's being said by those pictures. And I think that will give you a pretty good idea.
So, Ben Cullen.
The crop at the knees is one that you're trying to kind of avoid. You either want to, you know, do it a little bit higher up or get the whole body in. But I think that in general, it's not a bad picture. This is a guy in a ball, but there's at least the look on his face is what's making this picture. Like there's an effort. It's not just, I'm trying to figure out what to do. It's I'm doing it right now. He's got his tongue hanging out a little bit. It's just a more dynamic kind of picture. So that's good, but the crop is not good, or the composition, depending on if he cropped it or not.
My eye, and I've got two, my eyes go directly to that amputated leg on the left.
Yes.
And it's not the left, his left leg. And that kills this picture. I didn't even actually realize he actually had his tongue out, which I guess is a great expression. The composition to the left thing, which I really do like. Really have to watch out for the legs, because that balance in a human's body is the most important thing when it comes to sports pictures. You kind of have to either go for it, which means you do a really close-up shot of an athlete with doing something sports stuff, or you have the entire body. And if you go a bit half like this, you really don't want your eyes to go to the place that where you least want it to go, which is to the left leg. And same thing, I'm sure he has something else, but yeah, this one, because of just that one thing, it's kind of like, you know, checking out a hot chick who's got a very, very big nose. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Shalom.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there you go, Ben. So keep it going. You asked for a destructive one. I can't destroy it completely because there are good points about these photos, like Matt said, but come back again and show us some more. And but the Pelé's photo is also not bad, right? It's a bit...
He did what he could with that scene. I think that obviously the people who were on the other side of the field got a better picture, but I wouldn't say this is a throwaway because, you know, it is a good emotional kind of moment, but you have to keep in mind, through no fault of your own, sometimes you're just going to not be in the right place. And especially with football, where you can't move around, you're stuck. So either they're running at you or they're running away from you. So you take the shot, see what you can do, and just understand that sometimes it's not going to go your way.
And I know Pelé because I've actually met him here in Paris. And really tall guy. I remember that one. Really nice guy as well. Like Matt said, I think it's a good picture. He did what he can do, and there's nothing else you can really do about it. So, but the thing is, like, just because you got a celebration picture doesn't necessarily mean it's a keeper picture. Unless you're like kind of working for agencies and newspapers that need these pictures, right. Like that's the picture you need.
Yeah.
I throw this away because I don't think that's probably the best picture you've gotten from that match. And like I've said before over and over and over, there are other pictures other than peak action and celebrating in sports. And you kind of have to like look out for that, especially if you're not doing a professional basis. There are other shots you have taken or can take that is better than these celebrating moments and peak action stuff. So Pelé, good stuff. Do it again.
Yeah, I'd like to tie one more thing together between Pelé's and Ken's above, is that Pelé is stuck in one place, so he can only get what he can get. On that course, if you're shooting racing or if you're shooting anything where you can move around, you want to select where you're going to be so that you're putting yourself in position to get a good picture. If you can move around a lot, then you can try a lot of different things. That angle wouldn't have been the one that I would have tried. I would have moved somewhere where you could have. If you're sitting down or you're restricted to one single place, all you can hope for is that the action comes towards you because you can't move around. So it's the difference between selecting where you are when you can move and just being in one place that you've been assigned or that, you know, that was where you could sit. So you want to think about those things before you start shooting because your position is going to define the kind of pictures that you're going to be able to get.
And that's it with our very first training ground. We will have another one opened up probably by the time this podcast is out. So start submitting your photos and ask for a destructive or a constructive criticism. I think we kind of gave both for all of them, but, you know, just keep on asking. And we will keep on ripping them apart.
What is a podcast without any shopping tips? Ryu and I will tell you what we bought recently and tell you why you need to have it now or it's going straight to the bin.
So, Matt, what have you bought? Well, recently or not recently? Because
Not all that recently, but I haven't really been using it all that much until recently. The Ray Flash. Basically, it's a cheap way to get a ring flash. For people who don't understand what that is, ring flash is something that studio photographers use, and it takes the flash away from the hot shoe and puts it around the lens, so it's in a ring that goes all the way around the lens. So when the light comes out, it's literally a ring around the lens.
Like, in general, why do you want a ring flash?
Yeah, in general, it gives you a different look. The light will wrap around whatever you're shooting, and depending on what the background it is, it'll give you a real distinctive shadow that will set off the subject. So the subject will be lit by this wrapped around light, but then the shadow will be right around them on the background, and it'll pop out a little bit. You see this if you look at fashion magazines quite a bit. Celebrity portraits, a lot of them use ring flashes for that. In the studio, if you had a Profoto ring flash, just the flash itself would cost you over $1,000, and then you would need a pack to power it. The Ray flash is about $200. It fits onto whatever speed light that you already have. So I have a Nikon SB800. This plugs into the end of that and takes the light from the flash and then spreads it around the lens. So you get a ring flash effect for $200 instead of for $1,500. There's not that many places where you can get an adequate substitute for 15% of the cost, and this is one of those areas where you actually can do that.
Briefly, how would you use it in a sports photography situation?
So I've been using it on the sidelines, players coming through the tunnel. I've also used it for sports portraits. Anything where you want just a little bit different look than you would get ordinarily. I know a lot of people know about strobist and how you want to get the flash off camera as much as possible, but when you're running around on the sideline, there's not really a whole lot of options. You can use a remote cord or whatever, but that gets a little bit messy and it's not going to be that far off of the camera. But if you have a ring flash actually on your camera, it's all in one piece and you can move around a lot easier and the pictures are going to look very much different than somebody who just uses straight up on camera flash bouncing right off the subject.
I didn't really buy this recently. I bought it like probably a year ago. It's a lens hood by Aquatech. And Aquatech is a company that is based, I think, in Australia. And they make these things that protect you from rain. So for your camera body, your lenses and whatnot. Very, very expensive. And this is also not very, very cheap. It's $170 US. What it is that it's a soft hood for your lens. Most times, Canon and Nikon, those really big lenses, 300 2.8, 400 2.8, 600 f4, those come with these big lens hood things that are made out of carbon. And Matt pointed out before the show that these things cost a lot of money if you want to replace them. And they do break.
And they're not always available.
You can't really...
Yeah, you can't. And I lost some of the screws that hold the fastener on, and they were on back order. Just the fastener itself, and you need two of them for the kind that I have. The whole assembly is like $50. So that's just for the two fasteners. So it's $100 if you need to replace both of them. And it's not a part that they make all the time. So I think I had to wait about 6 weeks to get the parts that I needed just to put it on. And in the meantime, I was duct taping my lens hoods together, which is not really the way you want to go.
And the segue is perfect because you'll see a lot of people with duct tape lens hood at sporting events, because these things break a lot easier than you think they do. I don't really understand why this lens hood is not that popular, because it's Velcro and it's got these like plastic snap things, and you can kind of cinch it to make it a bit tighter around the lens itself. And it's tough enough, you can actually let the camera stand on itself. So Aquatech lens hood, big lens, and camera monopod. It will stand perfectly, balance itself up on the whole thing. I really cannot recommend it more. I mean, it's an expensive thing, but if you actually want to get a replacement lens hood, the hard ones, like, you know, the carbon fiber ones that come with the lens, they go around, you know, $800 and things like that. It's a lot lighter, and you can actually wrap it around in different ways, and you'll save a lot of space as well. I do really highly recommend it. That's it. That's it for gas. And with that, we end our 7th episode of Big Lens Fast Shutter, and the first one with Matt Cohen. Special thanks to Spencer Griffiths for our fantastic jingles, Boutsman, aka Arvin Batista, for the great icons. Can't do this without them. To check out their info as well as ours, please check out biglensfastshutter.com. See you next month.